The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good night. Welcome one and all to the SB Nation NFL Show. A reminder before we get started that this show is brought to you by DraftKings. DraftKings Sportsbook is an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use code SBNFL for a special offer when you sign up. That is code SBNFL only at DraftKings Sportsbook. As mentioned, this is the SB Nation NFL Show where, you guessed it, we love to talk about the NFL. We do that all week long. You can listen, of course, wherever you get your podcast. Subscribe, leave a rating, write a review, tag us in your Spotify wrap. Those things are super fun. You can also watch us, if that is your cup of tea, on the SB Nation NFL YouTube channel, Facebook page, or Twitter page. You can basically access us wherever content is displayed across the internet. I say us, I say we. We are SB Nation, the fantastic, the GOAT, Rachelle Privette on the ones and twos. As always, my name is RJ Ochoa, and with me, my co-pilot, the one and only, the handsome, the debonair, with a voice as silky smooth as Frank Sinatra. It is
what a morning.
You know, I don't celebrate your failures like this. You know, I'm such, like, our relationship and our friendship is such a one-sided thing. Like, I shower you with love and affection and praise. I will say I did take a shot at you on Twitter, so that one is deserved. Yes. We'll get, of course, to the Cowboys blowing a 17-point lead against the Jacksonville Jaguars. I tell you what, though, Pete, I was told last week that only a real trash team would go the distance with the Houston Texans.
That's right.
So I'm very, very excited to talk about the Kansas City Chiefs. But before we do that, we have to talk about the team in the AFC West that had the highest quality win in Week 15. The team that really put some pride back into the division. And that is, of course, the Los Angeles Chargers. A 17-14 victory over the Tennessee Titans. And joining us to discuss the LA Chargers from SB Nation's Bolts from the Blue, it is Michael Peterson on Twitter at Zone Tracks. Mikey P, welcome one at all. You have a Bye Buddy sweatshirt on. Can you explain that? Hope you find your dad.
Oh, Elf.
Yeah.
You don't ever seen Elf?
I'm not a big Elf person. I kind of hate Elf because it's like, it's all people want to like make references to. Like this, I kind of hate, like, Will Ferrell is really funny, but like every Will Ferrell movie has become like the quotes that we knew people say in college. You know what I mean? Like there are other movies and other films in the world that we can kind of pay attention to.
RJ's an angry elf.
Yeah, I mean, that's totally fair. I've become in recent years like a funny Christmas sweater guy. And so this is actually when I got back in college. I used to bounce at a bar wearing this like during the holiday season. And I was kind of a fan favorite. There's one, and I can't believe I lost it, but it was a black Christmas sweater that had Harambe on it wearing a Santa hat. Nice. And it just simply said, Harambe loved Christmas. And I just think that was the funniest thing in the world. You know, RIP to him. I still miss him every day. Which is why I'm sad I lost the sweatshirt.
Michael, were you the bouncer that would take the fake ID, or would you say, take this back and get the hell out of here?
The latter. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. You're not going to get it over me,
but you can go try this with some
Don't get me wrong. People tried. People tried with like completely different haircuts. I had like people hand me IDs of people that were completely different, like ethnicities and stuff like that. Like, I mean, there was no, you know, no respect for me at all.
Wow. You know, Michael Peterson's like work history is very interesting. We've talked about this with him offline. We don't have to get all the way into it, but we found out a bouncer. He also moonlights as Baker Mayfield, who will be the quarterback for the LA Rams tonight on Monday Night Football. But the better team in LA, the Chargers, Michael, again, escaped with the 17-14 point win over the Tennessee Titans late in the game. Tennessee ties it up. And I tweeted out, I said, man, this is so frustrating how the Chargers can't be consistently good. Last week, we all gave them their flowers after the big Sunday night win against the Dolphins. And here they were. They struggled, but by the hair on their chinny chin chin, they beat those Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, this unfortunately was kind of another usual Chargers game where they start pretty strong. And there's a lot of games this season where they go out to a 10-0 lead. And then the offense kind of disappears through the second and third quarter. I think after last night, it's been 8 straight weeks of no touchdowns in the third quarter. And I want to say it's quite a few weeks in a row now that they start with a 3-and-out opening with the ball in the second half. But In true Chargers form, when the game had to be won, when something needed to happen, Justin Herbert comes out and puts it on himself and does just that. On that final drive, I think it was 48 seconds left, no timeouts whatsoever. He hits a 16-yard ball to Mike Williams and then a 35-yard pass to Williams up the right sideline to get within field goal range. For those who want to know just how crazy it was a frozen rope. There was 0.7 yards between him and the sideline, 0.8 yards between him and the next nearest defender. And I think Next Gen Stats had it at 22% completion percentage on that exact pass. So just absolute Herbert magic. But unfortunately, it'd be cool if they scored points, you know, between the first drive and the last drive.
Now, the Chargers with the win and the Patriots debacle are in playoff position here. And I think the rest of the NFL is going to know, well, what did the Titans do to stop Austin Ekeler? 12 carries for 58 yards, 2 carries for 12 yards. I feel like that is something that a lot of teams would take in a playoff game against Ekeler. What did you see that the Titans were doing?
Yeah, the Chargers offensive line, unfortunately, hasn't been all that great, even with guys like Corey Linsley and some of the younger guys stepping up, Zion Johnson at right guard, left tackle, Jamari Sawyer. But you got to give it to the Texans, who, despite missing some of their front guys, I mean, all they kind of needed was Jeffrey Simmons, who's been an absolute stellar defensive tackle since the end of the league a few weeks ago. And even look back last week against the Dolphins, Christian Wilkins essentially took over that entire trench by himself and ruined the run game of the Chargers. So for whatever reason, man, all it takes is one good defensive lineman to throw a wrench into the Chargers' plans. I mean, I think Bud Dupree played last night. I mean, just in general, it just hasn't taken too much. So I think the biggest surprise, though, was the 2 receptions for 12 yards for Ekeler, who was coming real close to being on pace to beat Christian McCaffrey's, you know, season receptions record by a running back. And he needed to kind of keep going strong. He had 8 last week. I think he needed to average like 7 through the last 4 weeks, but 2 last night, unfortunately, kind of bumps him off that track. But overall, yeah, they didn't need Austin Ekeler. I mean, they ran it with him. He scored his 9th rushing touchdown of the season. But overall, with the top 3 wide receivers back, they didn't actually have to dump it off to him as much as they have in the past.
Michael, everybody's talking about the Chargers' schedule, obviously, to end the season, and it certainly looks very favorable. You look at it now coming off these back-to-back wins at Indianapolis on Monday Night Football, because we definitely need more Colts in our lives. The Rams, the battle for LA, the big one, and then at Denver to wrap it all up. It's hard to envision this team finishing with fewer than 9 wins. I mean, even if you figure that if they drop one of these, they're going to the playoffs. I know that is a teetering kind of statement to say, if you're a Chargers fan right now, because you've been so burned right now because of that critical win over the Dolphins and Miami falling to Buffalo in the snow game. The Chargers are now the 5 seed, or excuse me, the 6 seed. Sorry, they're no longer just the last team in. I mean, that's a big difference between having to go to Kansas City or having to go to Cincinnati in the wild card round. What is the ceiling like? Like, do you believe, or are you worried that the team with these kind of slow, methodical wins, that formula isn't sustainable in the playoffs?
It's hard not to think that this isn't sustainable. But the thing is, they have sustained it for most of the year, right? Like, after the team's laundry list of injuries at so many notable positions, they were able to kind of weather that storm and win a lot of these close games. And then the second they start getting some of these guys back, mainly being Keenan Allen and Mike Williams on the field at the same time, they've been able to rattle off wins against better teams. For the most part, they were beating teams that didn't have records above 500. So for them to be 8-6 at this point, I thought when they had five games left, essentially, I thought it was going to be two losses to the Dolphins and the Titans, and then they can win out three and still finish 9-8, which is incredible to say that they're going to mirror their record from a season ago, despite all the injuries. But now they're in a position after beating the Titans and Dolphins, they win these three games, that puts them at 11-6, which is a two-game improvement in the win column as opposed to last year. Just absolutely incredible. Really, it comes down to, is this team going to play down to the competition, which is something they have done for the last few years. If they do that, then maybe they don't win out 3-0 here. I mean, God forbid they go 1-2 the final three games. I just don't think that happens. At worst, 2-1, finish 10-6, you improve on your win-loss record. And then again, you're in the playoffs, which again is a huge step forward from last season.
I think the difference here that you're thinking about is, it's not the Chargers as is going into the playoffs. It's the Chargers potentially with Bosa and Slater coming back. Can you give us the latest on their trajectories and whatever we know right now that the team is saying?
Yeah, that's a good point, because they've been out for so long, you kind of forget they're on the team and you just kind of assume what we have right now is what they're going to have in the playoffs. But as it stands, there hasn't been any sort of door shut on either a return of Bosa or Slater. The unfortunate part, though, is Bosa's initial timeline was 6 to 10 weeks after the groin injury. And I think we're in week 11 or 12 of him being out, with no tangible timeline weeks. You know, is he going to practice this week? Is he not? We don't know that for sure. And then Slater, the same thing with him. Last week when Staley spoke with the media, he said Slater was still weeks away from potentially returning. So I just think worst case scenario, and more than likely the reality, is they will return for the playoffs, or if anything, maybe the last game of the season. But if they've already locked down the playoff spot, maybe they don't return for the regular season. So as it stands, I think fans should just get comfortable knowing that the group they had the last two games is probably who will be on the field for the remainder of the regular season.
I think, Michael, correct me if I'm wrong, you're probably big Bengals fans. I mean, because the Bengals can knock the Ravens further down. I mean, there's a world here where the Chargers do finish as the top wild card team in the AFC. I know that sounds ridiculous, and you know, there's only 3 weeks, but that 3 weeks is a long time. I mean, we just saw the Ravens obviously lose. That's a frustrating thing. Sorry, Rachel, but it is definitely possible. And I think both teams both conferences, that top wildcard team gets to visit the AFC South or NFC South winner. Right now, that would be the Titans if you're the Chargers. I mean, yeah, that's in Nashville as opposed to LA, but that could really smile upon the Chargers. Are you aware of this? Is that what you're posturing, hoping kind of works out for the Chargers since they're not going to win the division?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, obviously they're not going to win the division, so what's the next best option after that? If the Bengals can take care of business, knock the Ravens even further out. And I mean, the Ravens aren't doing themselves any favors. Yes, Lamar Jackson was just recently hurt, but in general, that offense with LJ really wasn't moving the ball too well, and it was definitely underperforming in recent weeks. So I would say best case scenario, really, if the Chargers could face the Titans again, I guarantee you it would probably be a better game for the Chargers. I think the Titans always play good teams well. They play the Chiefs well earlier in the season. They just kind of find a way to really make them uncomfortable, especially in the waning seconds of the game. If they're able to even travel to Nashville, get a team that, again, is just going to run Derrick Henry and have almost no semblance of a passing game, I think that's a big win for the Chargers.
Last one for you, Michael. Not Chargers related, but I know I was busy because the Cowboys had played at noon. And Pete, what was the story with Ryan Tannehill? Just so everybody knows, I mean, it's an important NFL story. He was carted off and returned.
Yeah, he was carted off and returned. The quote from him specifically, I think post game when asked about the injury, was that he said, whatever the top option is on the pain scale, that's what it felt like when he left the game. So, you know, the number 10, the bright red face screaming in agony, that's what he said his injury was. But it goes in the blue tent, comes out, they cart him away, and then he does return. They tape the crap out of his ankle. But it's kind of crazy to think, like, okay, if it was an unbearable pain, you just had it taped up and managed to play it. I mean, these are football players. These are tough guys. So it's crazy to hear him say that, especially after coming back.
Changes the game when
you're a football player.
Yeah, changes the game when you got a rookie that is ready to take your job in the 2023 season, I think. And sometimes you'd force your way unless it was a you know, a different type of backup. But I think that's can play into it.
I was going to say that you're a tough guy, Michael, before Pete interrupted me. Michael Peterson from SB Nation's Bolts from the Blue on Twitter at Zone Tracks. Michael, if we don't talk to you, have a very Merry Christmas, or else the Grinch will come for you.
Or else? I love the holidays. I'm going to enjoy it out the wazoo. You don't have to tell me twice.
Are you a Christmas Eve or Christmas Day present opener?
Christmas Day present opener, Christmas Eve party haver. Absolutely love okay. Christmas.
So like the dinner is Christmas Eve.
Like Christmas Eve is a spread of all your favorite like appetizers and hors d'oeuvres. We watch every movie during the day that we always do on every Christmas. My sister usually wants to shotgun a White Claw or something, and so I have to partake in that. But overall, we have the greatest time on Christmas Eve, and then we just kind of chill out on Christmas Day.
Ain't no law when you're drinking the claw. So
ain't no law.
Good on you guys.
Drinking right. claws. You got that.
Have a holly jolly Christmas, Michael Peterson. Mm-hmm. We love you. Have a good day.
Love you guys. See ya.
All right.
Pete Sweeney, we might as well do it. I might as well get to it. Yeah. The Kansas City. Actually, before we get there, we're not going to touch on the Saturday games because, look, we're in the moment. I mean, Saturday, as far as we're concerned, Pete, that was like 500 years ago in the NFL.
The greatest
right?
comeback in NFL history happened on Saturday.
That's what I was just going to ask briefly. Give me two sentences on all of Saturday's action. So in two sentences, you have to encompass the three games that we saw.
Okay. Well,
that's not it. So, like, tell us when you're ready for your sentences.
Okay. I'm trying to just remember the three games. It was.
Do you want me to go first? Buy you some time?
Yes. Why don't you do that?
Okay. My first sentence is the Indianapolis Colts are the fraudiest frauds to ever fraud in the history of the NFL. My second sentence is Saturday night's game between the Bills and Dolphins was the game of the year. And was literally the most beautiful game to watch yes. that I have ever seen. Like, the night games in Buffalo hit different, dude. Like, they are beautiful to watch.
Kirk Cousins is the highest variance player in NFL history. Tyler Huntley is not Lamar Jackson. And Buffalo got lucky in their home stadium.
That was actually only one sentence. So you have a second sentence to play with if you want to.
Huzzah.
Okay. Well, we are now five games through because the Seahawks lost to the 49ers on Thursday night. We had the three games, obviously, on Saturday. We just talked Chargers-Titans with Michael Peterson, so that's five down, which should make for a shorter show than usual, but that's typically not how we roll. I feel like the MF double MVP is still hanging in the balance, right? We can go a number of different ways. By the way, I do want to say he didn't tell me to relay this, but a message from the boss man, Michael Kist, tweeted out on Monday morning. I don't know if you saw this, Pete, that and this message goes to the listeners. If you were trying to listen to any SB Nation podcast this past weekend and they were getting randomly stopped after about 5 minutes, Kist said that the issue has been fixed. So yeah. If that happened to you, whether it was the SB Nation NFL show or any particular team network, our apologies. It was Pete's fault.
NFL,
right, you ready, Pete?
NFL Saturday and World Cup. Nice timing for our parent company there. Yikes.
Seriously. Let's move on. Let's get to it. The Kansas City Chiefs survived. Oh my gosh. Yeah. 30-24. Woo! Unlike the Cowboys, the Chiefs needed overtime to bury these Texans. I mean,
That's true.
What a weird world. I can tell you every Cowboys fan in my timeline or my mention was like, nobody's going to talk about this. Nobody's going to say anything. Was it a struggle? What was it kind of a, seeing the tweets from the Arrowhead Pride account, there was a lot of like, huh, this is really happening. Oh, what's going on? How are we going to do? How's this going to end? Ultimately, the Chiefs do win the AFC West for the 100th year in a row.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing today. It's trying to appreciate what Andy Reid has accomplished here. I mean, it is just a complete reversal of the franchise while also remembering this is a little concerning 4 weeks out of the playoffs when you're flirting with the Houston Texans. But what I would tell you is one of the oddest games I have watched covering the Chiefs, and I've been doing it for a bit here, and it's crazy. They had over 500 net yards. Like, if I told you nothing and said the Chiefs had over 500 net yards against the Texans and I gave you no more information about the game, I mean, you would think that the Chiefs won 44-12 or something, you know? So
even like, not to ignore your point, but even if I just looked at Mahomes' stat line,
right.
Mahomes was 36 of 41. So he threw the ball 41 times and five incompletions, 336 yards, touchdowns. Like, to your point, I would have thought they smoked him.
That's the best completion percentage with 40 passes ever. So
what a game. What a weird game. Football rules.
It was just mistake after mistake. And it was also things they couldn't control in Carl Sheffers and the penalties they were calling. They called 10 penalties for over 100 yards. So you talk about that 500 yards, 100 of them came back. The Chiefs lost.
Brutal weekend for officials. But we talked that Vikings game. They had two defensive touchdowns taken away. Awful, awful, awful week for officials.
The Chiefs lost two turnovers. They've actually lost a turnover battle in eight games this year. They've won five of them, which is bananas, really, because you don't win when you have more turnovers. Their turnover differential suffered again. In this game, there were mistakes in the kicking game. It was just bad tackling, allowing the Texans timely football, and not a team that really should have been in it. It's a two quarterback system. They were missing their top two receivers. They were missing their entire offense in Damian Pierce. And so it's a bittersweet feeling, I think, in Kansas City. You feel grateful that the Chiefs were able to squeak out this win against the worst team in football and win your seventh straight division. But again, you know, as you were saying again to Michael, sure, 3 weeks is a lot of time, but in the same token, 3 weeks is not a lot of time. And if they continue to play games like this that they did against the Texans and the Broncos with these mistakes and letting the referees basically determine the game because you're not playing clean football, that's the only time really referee decisions can if you're playing 60 minutes. I know
that's what, like,
it was bad. Yeah, this, like, week, but
I was very, very on record about this. I hated how some, not all, but some Bills fans complained about the coin toss in overtime against the Chiefs last year in the divisional round. And what I hated about that is, like, dude, you lost the game. Like, you had 13 seconds. You know what I mean? Like, if you play sound football, like, to your point, the coin toss, the ref, the official, the call, those things aren't as macro if you take care of things all throughout the game. And so, yeah, I mean, the expression that's been going around with the Cowboys, at least, you know, as it related to the Texans game, was playing with their food. Felt like the Chiefs kind of play with their food a little bit here. You know what I mean? They got the win. How many division titles is this in a row? I'm actually seriously asking.
It's seven, and that ties the Rams. I believe it was in the 70s. There's only been one longer streak, and that is the New England Patriots, who did it in the 2000s, and they were at 11. So, not trying to talk about next year, but if the Chiefs were able to do it next year, they would be alone at two. And you know, at that point,
kind of tied at two right now.
Yeah, I'm chasing the Patriots in a way, which is crazy.
I don't know if you know this, but so they've won seven in a row. Obviously, four of those with Mahomes. So it's not even all, like, not to discredit Mahomes.
No, it began with Alex Smith in 15.
Right.
So 15, 16, 17 were Alex.
Man, Peyton retires and just welcome Kansas City. But so seven in a row. I don't know. I don't know if you know. How many did the Chiefs have prior to 2015? I would bet it's not more than, like, a lot more than seven. Like, I would bet it's like eight or nine. If
I don't have that offhand, but they were few and far between, you know, for a time.
The Chiefs did clinch the AFC West, as mentioned. This was a big weekend for clinching. Entering this weekend, the Philadelphia Eagles were the only team who had clinched a playoff berth. They have not clinched the NFC East yet. We'll get there in a moment. Thursday night, the San Francisco 49ers clinched the NFC West. So both Western divisions have been won. The Minnesota Vikings clinched the NFC North with their win on Saturday that we talked about. The Buffalo Bills clinched a playoff berth with Saturday night's win over the Miami Dolphins. Not the AFC East yet, though, but the Chiefs did clinch the AFC West. So we now have three divisions locked up through week 15.
Have that number.
We'll see which ones come next.
Have that number for you. So it's seven, and all the other teams in the division had 15 championships. So the Chiefs over the last 7 years have narrowed it down to one. It's a three-way tie for first at 15. The Chiefs have 14 now. So it's quite a comeback.
So that's what I'm saying. So literally when Andy Reid arrived, there were seven division titles in Kansas City history.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And, well, I know he didn't arrive, like, it took 2 years, because 2013 was the first year. No, 15 was the first year, right? It was the first year.
No, it was 13 was the first year, and they got into the playoffs.
2 years of the rebuild, years of the rebuild with Alex Smith.
Yeah.
And, because they were the wild card that crazy Colts.
Andrew Luck came back on them in that first year. They missed the playoffs in 14. That's the only year Andy Reid has missed the playoffs. And then ever since then, it's been winning the division.
So then year one, wild card loss, the blown lead against Andrew Luck, then missed the playoffs in 14. But since 2015, so they had seven division titles before Andy Reid showed up.
Yes.
And he has now won seven in a row. That is crazy. Wow, shout out to me. I took a guess. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Good.
I was right.
Good work.
Come up of the week for our Joe Chuck.
Yeah, sure.
All right, let's move on. Shout out to the Chiefs. The Texans, by the way, have not cemented the number one overall pick, but
it's over, man. It's over because they're so injured. I mean, they're not gonna lose.
Let's move on. The Philadelphia Eagles, as mentioned, they flirted with the Bears. This was kind of a flirty sort of game for some contenders in the NFL. But the Eagles came away with the win. Jalen Hurts had like a parting of the Red Sea touchdown at the end of the first half. I don't know if you saw this. It was just unbelievable. I saw Rachelle tweet out early on that Devontae Smith, like, at one point had like three catches for 100 yards or something like that. Justin Fields, you know, toyed with the idea of going off 15 carries, 95 yards, including an almost touchdown in the first half that David Montgomery wound up punching in. Big day for Montgomery, had two touchdowns. But 25-20, the final score, the Eagles moved to 13-1, maintained the best record in the NFL. There was a clear gap between them and the Cowboys in the NFC East, as we saw in the same window. We'll get to Dallas soon. 13-1, they already had their playoff berth clinched. The Eagles now can clinch the NFC East with any win or any Cowboys loss, and they can subsequently clinch the number one seed in the NFC with any win or any Vikings loss, assuming they do wind up winning the NFC East as well, which is an overwhelming likelihood.
Yeah, the thing about the Eagles is just they're just the most solid team in the league, and you try to compare them to some of the AFC teams, but what you see in the Chiefs and Bills and Bengals a lot of the time is just inconsistency. We'll get to the Bengals, but they had to come back from 17 down, and sure, they did it. But, you know, I just the Eagles are a team that for the most part this year has just come out and dominated games, and it's on both sides of the football. And they have the right now the MVP favorite in Jalen Hurts. And this was a day when he threw two picks, but that's okay because he's still doing it on the ground with 61 yards and three touchdowns. And A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith are just absolute weapons and very selfless. Like, there are some games where it's just A.J. Brown and Smith. I'll go on the mic and I'll say, I don't care about your fantasy team. It's just such a solid team. And even when they have scares like this, they're managing to win those tough games. It's a little bit easier to understand a scare versus maybe the most exciting player of the NFL in Justin Fields than it is the Houston Texans, if you're talking about the elite teams of the NFL. And then for me on the Bears side, it's a continued confirmation of this is a franchise star. It's a star in the making in the NFL in Justin Fields. And I that was the biggest question that they had to answer. If there was one thing that you wanted to accomplish, if you were Ryan Poles and the Bears this year, it was, can Justin Fields be our guy? And it's been a resounding yes. There's no question about that. So now they have to build a system around him, I think, similar to what they did in Baltimore. Not exactly the same player. I think that they're different players, but it's going to be a similar type of thing. And I think if they lean in,
well, they do what Baltimore didn't. They need to give him some pass catchers. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's you have to learn from Baltimore.
It's not good when your leading receiver has 39 yards. But I think it's going to be exciting, and I think the Bears can be spicy down the stretch. There's a lot of teams, Bengals included, Chiefs included, that will be watching Bears and Bills next week. And I just, because of Fields and what you saw him do against the Eagles, I think he can play spoiler. And then just to wrap up, because I don't want to discount the Eagles and just think I'm talking about this lottery pick team too much, but man, it would almost be shocking if a team other than the Eagles came out of the NFC. I just think that's where we're at right now.
I'm going to get to the Eagles briefly, but just briefly on the Bears, as you mentioned, I think for the first time in a long time, it feels like the darkest part of the night is behind the Bears,
yeah.
Right? Like they are, you know, that's very, very clearly, yeah, they're clearly moving forward. It is still a process. But we're past the point where, like, you know, early it was like, oh, Justin Fields had these like two games, these three games, you know what I mean? Like, no, there's clearly a lot of talent there to work with. It's exciting to think about what they can be, obviously, as they continue this rebuild. So good for the Bears in that sense. They're not there yet. They were never going to be there. The fact that they made this game close is a credit to them and a credit to Fields. But Philly, you're right. I mean, I you know, on the MVP thing, we said a week ago that kind of the maybe contender to him was Mahomes. If Mahomes did a Mahomes thing, you know, kind of squeaking one out against the Chiefs, I think hurts Mahomes' MVP candidacy. I think Joe Burrow kept pace, you know, if things go the bank. I think the only way that Jalen Hurts is now an MVP is now no longer related to Patrick Mahomes. I think it's if Joe Burrow goes off or if Josh Allen goes off. I think the league wants to give it to Josh Allen.
Our friends at DraftKings today. Mahomes is actually a little closer because he had a really nice, clean game, as we said, whereas I think Jalen threw the two picks. But Jalen is still right at minus 150. Mahomes is at plus 165. And the odds don't agree with you, RJ. And you may be right, but Josh Allen and Joe Burrow are at plus 1,000, which is far down.
So,
and then next is Justin Jefferson.
My read on The league, like, Josh Allen is like a chosen son of the NFL, right? Like, the league loves Josh Allen. And so, like, you know, they're the number one seed in the AFC. If they hold on, if they, you know what I mean? Like, and I've mentioned that Monday night game in the penultimate week of the regular season, that's in Cincinnati. If Josh Allen, you know, locks up the one seed, and you know what I mean, with this like massive Monday night football performance or something like that, I could see it going that way, but it would require a bit of teetering on Jalen's behalf. I think Jalen is the favorite.
I think if the Eagles win the conference, I don't see how it changes.
Well, the votes are cast technically at the end of the regular season. That would be how. But I mean, you're right. Like,
even if Mahomes were to get back in the position,
sure.
I just think the narrative is on Hurts' side.
I agree with you entirely, because even in this game, he threw two interceptions, but still threw for 315 yards, still ran in three touchdowns. I mean, like, he is an explosive player who can find a way to get it done really no matter what's happening around him. And that's what I'm saying. Like, if they slip, but like, now we're at a point where any slip up is kind of inconsequential. You know what I mean? Because they have to do is win one game to clinch the division or clinch the one seed. You know, like, there's no more like big moment. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's no more like game of consequence for the Eagles in the regular season. The next time that the Eagles are going to play a game where crap is on the line, where they're kind of sweating, is in the divisional round in overwhelming likelihood, right? Because, you know, they're going to win this thing.
And Hurts has the best defense in football, arguably, on his side, right? You also have the situation in Philly where it's four defensive linemen have never had 10 sacks on the same team. Hassan Reddick is there. Jason Hargrave is there. Josh Sweat is now at 9.5, and Brandon Graham is at 8.5. This is with three games to play. They're probably going to do that. And it's just that Patrick Mahomes doesn't have that caliber of defense on his side. And if that's who they are saying is his closest competitor, no one else is close. It's just, man, it's hard to believe it's not going to go to Jalen Hurts this year. Something crazy would have to happen, I think.
I don't know who, if I had to pick a team, because I would love to see the Eagles lose. If I had to pick a team and like bet everything on like one game, I don't know who it would be. I mean, I think I'd probably pick the Chiefs. You know what I mean? If I had to have one game, but man, I'm kind of close to picking the Bengals. Like, if the Bengals are at full health, but I mean, I would just take the Chiefs because of Mahomes and Kelce and, you know, just kind of reliability in that sense. But it's hard. It's hard to not, you know, feel like this is the Eagles thing to lose. I mean, and like I'm saying, the challenging part, we deal with this every time this happens when a team like runs away with something, is okay, like, is the rest going to hurt them? That's going to be the narrative for the next month, because like I said, they don't have any consequences coming up for a month.
I have something to ask you, and I can't really feel like I can answer this question without complete bias, because I think everybody knows what I would say. Take your Cowboys out of it, right? So the Cowboys somehow are non-existent in this scenario. The Eagles make the Super Bowl. What would make for the perfect Super Bowl Sunday if the Eagles are playing who? Like, who would you want to see them playing on Super Bowl?
That's what
Sunday?
I just said. I would probably pick the Chiefs. Like, I would would want to see.
Is that
the
most entertaining game? Is that the most entertaining?
Well, that's a different entertaining. I mean, yeah, yes and no.
I feel like I can't answer that question.
It would also be entertaining from like an Andy Reid standpoint.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, that would be interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
I would be just as interested if it were the Bills. I think we overlook this. I talked about this with Jason Witten actually at BTB recently. Sean McDermott is from the Jim Johnson tree. Like, that dude, Jim Johnson, former Eagles defensive coordinator, great. I mean, you know, that dude lives in my mind, or, you know, will forever live in my mind rent-free, because he destroyed Tony Romo year in and year out. And Sean McDermott comes straight from that tree. So he has a history with Philadelphia in that sense. I mean, so entertainment wise, it would be any one of those things. I really, really, if the Cowboys don't exist, I really want an Eagles Vikings NFC championship game. I really want that. Like, that would be so much fun, in a lot of ways. I know every Eagles fan listening would be like, oh, I'll take that, but it'd be entertaining, especially if it went the other way.
How about Stefon Diggs versus the Vikes in the Super Bowl? That might be interesting as well. There's a lot of storylines here.
That's true.
What's up, guys? I'm Evan Turner, co-host of the Point Forward podcast, alongside Andre Iguodala. We got a special series out now, all about our favorite NBA cities, the greatest places to travel, the evolving cultures and cuisines, and some of our most memorable experiences while we were on the road during our many years in the NBA. We talk about Miami, Chicago, New York, and many more. Tune in to Courts and Culture, the Point Forward travel guide, sponsored by Hennessy. You can find it on Point Forward Feed on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.
Beloved brands know customer relationships are everything. That's why over 130,000 trust Klaviyo to power smarter digital relationships across their websites, emails, SMS, and reviews. And now, there's Klaviyo AI, your guide to smarter insights, decisions, work, and results. Brands like Everyman Jack trust Klaviyo AI to personalize product recommendations that keep customers coming back. Discover Klaviyo AI at klaviyo.com/Vox. That's klaviyo.com/Vox.
Let's move on. Let's just do it. The Dallas Cowboys blew a 17-point lead in the second half to the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Wish someone would have seen it coming.
You know, look. The pick is what it was. You got the pick right. Good for you. But the Cowboys were owning this game. And that's I actually, right before we started recording or started streaming, I was finishing my stock report that I do at Blogging the Boys. And there were so many I had such a difficult time because there were so many stock ups for Dallas. Right. Like there were so many people who played well. It's just, you know, they did a handful of things really poorly that led to, you know, them falling apart and losing. I mean, you know, they had a turnover in the game's final minutes that set them up, and then they went three and out. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was just a perfect storm of confusion and clutter and disarray. The Cowboys have never won in Jacksonville. They will get another chance in 2030, though. Don't worry. And they breathed life. You know, Trevor Lawrence and the Jaguars are going to be this big time story. This is, you know what it's like. This is kind of a mount win for the Jaguars, yeah. Right? We beat the Cowboys, whatever, blah, blah, America's game of the week, all that stuff. The Jaguars, though, you know, we got to get to them first because they won.
Right.
They are 6-8 right behind those Titans at 7-7, and they will meet still. The Jaguars very much could win the AFC South, as a lot of people have been talking about.
I would love it. And man, it almost, you look at that stretch in the middle of the season where they lost, let's see here, 5 in a row and 6 of 7. And if they would have had one of those games, this would be a completely different year. And just the fact that they meet the Titans, if they continue to take care of business against the Jets and the Texans, which they should, they control
Thursday Night Football. They visit the Jets this week.
They control their own destiny in a sense. And remember, yeah, we came into this year, and it was
Completely control it. No, I mean, like, just to be clear, yeah, they literally control their own destiny.
No, you're right. They came into this year, and we had conversations this season where we were bringing up stats. This is when Trey Lance was still healthy, and stats had a right point. He was correct. Trevor Lawrence doesn't take as much heat as he should for being a potential bust. And somewhere along the lines this season, he just reversed course, and he's so clearly a franchise guy, and as advertised. And man, what a disaster last year was to just waste a year of his career. But that's okay now because Doug Peterson has righted this ship. And what's fortunate about that for them is even with that slow start, the division sucks. And now what you have, and this is a scary proposition for the AFC, like AFC's team should not want to play the Jaguars because the Jaguars, their record is not going to dictate the quality of team that they are. And I know we were joking, like I picked the Jaguars. I just saw what happened with the Cowboys last week, and I just believe the Jaguars have really turned this page. And that's what I think. I know Dallas is probably pretty ticked off. You have a better pulse on that than I do. But the Jaguars are not. What I'm trying to say is the Jaguars are not a 6-8 team. They're not. They're a different team than they were at the beginning of the season. And this is a higher quality loss than I think probably Dallas is swallowing this morning when they look at that record.
That's true. But and I think I don't want to take away from what you're saying. I just think some full context is necessary. And sometimes that's why I love the SB Nation NFL show, because, you know, nobody can watch every single game in high level detail, which mm-hmm. is why like this podcast is so helpful. Right. Because like right. I didn't get to watch the Chiefs Texans game. So it's helpful context for me to, you know, hear from you.
Yeah, yeah.
And similarly, I don't want to take anything away from Trevor Lawrence whatsoever. Like what he's doing, like you're right. Like he's a franchise quarterback. You know, even if the Jaguars miss the playoffs, like it's a very exciting time in Jacksonville moving forward. Obviously, next season, there'll be a really vogue pick to win the division and stuff like that. But I mean, near the end of this game, Jaguars are down by 3. They ultimately get a field goal, obviously, to tie the game and send it to overtime. But there was a moment where Evan Engram, you know, it looked like he went out of bounds, didn't go out of bounds. So that moment goes to review. The Jaguars had to burn a timeout because he was ruled in bounds. That was their final timeout. So officials are checking this out, and they're about to realize, or they're about to, you know, as everyone's watching, they're going to rule that he was in bounds.
Yeah.
And so we know that the clock is going to start the moment the officials ultimately, I'm getting the play wrong, but ultimately, like the sequence is, the Jaguars had a clock stoppage by way of the officials. And the moment the officials set the ball, the clock was going to run. Greg Olson is like detailing this whole sequence for us on the broadcast. He's like, look, the moment the officials get set, that clock is going to start running. There were like 35 seconds left at this point in the game. And Greg Olson's like, Trevor Lawrence, he has to be ready to go right there, right now. The moment the officials back off, you got to snap that ball. And what happens? The officials go up, they set things up. And Trevor Lawrence, he wasted like 10 seconds. I mean, he's standing there with the clock running and wasted like 10 seconds. And to his credit, hikes the ball, throws a pass, gets in field goal range. They call the timeout. They tie the game. They go on to win it. Yeah. But my point is like, that is a like bare minimum, low hanging fruit level thing that a franchise quarterback has to know. That like, that's
of
a troubling thing.
But procedure, I'm not going to get on procedural stuff in his second year.
Dude, but like, that, you got to know that. You have like that. No, Trevor Lawrence has played enough big time football games to know that kind of stuff.
I don't disagree. And, just like a seasoned veteran probably shouldn't do an underhand pass and cost their team the game. I think the both points can be true.
So I would also add to that, like, we're sitting here rightfully throwing flowers at Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence's team won the toss in overtime. He went three and out. Mm-hmm. I mean, he went three and out. And, you know, the Jaguars won this game because of a tip ball that they returned for a touchdown off the interception. So that doesn't mean he's a loser or he sucks. He's great and he's awesome and he has turned the page, and that is a good thing for the NFL. But this was not won off of the mighty arm of Trevor Lawrence near the end of the game. He did definitely bring them back over the course of the second half as a whole. But he had a very critical sequence of errors that could have cost them what is a valuable win.
I do not disagree. But I guess the counter argument is the Cowboys have a great offense. When that team puts up 34 points and you're able to get four touchdowns and over 300 yards, sure, you're right about the mistakes. But the only reason they were in this game was because of Trevor Lawrence.
On the Cowboys side of things, it looked like, you know, okay, they've responded very well to the lackadaisical performance against Houston. They were up 27-10. You know, at the same time, Chicago was playing Philly tough, and you're kind of allowing yourself to like, wow, you know, if this goes a certain way, Christmas Eve is going to be electric, this stuff. And then, you know, Dallas just kind of falls apart. And, you know, Dak Prescott threw what is literally a game-losing pick six. It's been shown and seen many times by many people, the all 22 angle. That ball is perfectly placed. Noah Brown just tips it up. You know what I mean? And you tip it up and anything bad can happen. And the worst thing did. I would say Dak was, I actually invented a new category for my stock report called volatile stock. Like, he and Noah Brown both had incredible games that had these awful moments. Like, they were ultimately great performances that just had the wrong thing happen at the wrong time. And now every Cowboys fan is like, freaking out. I mean, I have gone, you're a wrestling fan. What is the opposite of a heel turn?
Face turn.
So the face turn is you go from like villain to good guy. Is that what it is?
Yeah. And you suddenly do something grand that makes the crowd go, oh my God, he's on our side again. Yes. Yeah.
So like, I've done a face turn, like, because nobody bagged on the Cowboys like I did, but man, the discourse around them is ridiculous. Yeah, they did. I don't know if you saw this, because your WFT lost on Sunday night. The Cowboys clinched a playoff berth. They are a playoff team there. And look, I recognize this is sad and pathetic, but it speaks to the state of the Cowboys over the last 15 years. They are a playoff team for a second straight season for the first time since 2006 and 2007. Think about it. Like, it had been 15 years since they were a playoff team in back-to-back years.
Is the counter argument and is the underlying problem that if the Cowboys strike out and go one and out, this playoff berth costs you Sean Payton in the long term? Is that a thing that still exists?
I don't think that doesn't concern me anymore. I mean, like, you know, look.
Well, we know you're a big McCarthy guy. I mean, I know that.
But, like, this is, look, if you had to bet your life savings on the Chiefs or the field to win the Super Bowl, who would you bet on?
All right. Is this podcast going live in Kansas City?
if you have to bet your life savings on the Chiefs or the field.
I would take the field.
Is there any team that you would take over the field? No, there isn't, right? Because winning the Super Bowl is incredibly difficult.
I think in previous years, right, possibly. Not this year.
Sometimes there are years, right? Whatever. But like, you know, 2018, we all would have bet the Chiefs, right? We said, screw the field. Give me the Chiefs. Give me this Mahomes year, whatever. But like, it's a very hard thing to do. And so this isn't coping. This isn't anything. This is just context for where the Cowboys are at. They are becoming a team. Like, we just sat here and talked about how the Chiefs have won the division 7 years in a row. Mm-hmm. And what happens? You get there year after year after year after year. Eventually fate smiles upon you and you win it all. right? And the Cowboys have not been that team. The Cowboys have been a team that has had success and then fallen apart and had to climb back up and had success and fallen apart. They are becoming a team under Mike McCarthy that is consistently a playoff contender. That doesn't mean that they deserve a banner or a trophy or the biggest applause in the world, but they are becoming that team. They lost a really frustrating game and ended the day as a playoff team. They have 10 wins at the week of Christmas. Like, in the overall, they are doing very, very, very well. And now they're in this interesting spot where, you know, they're kind of effectively entrenched as the top wild card, but they're not. It's still kind of a formality. And so they will probably be able to manufacture their own bye if they want in week 18. But they are going to, in all likelihood, visit the NFC South winner and then probably go to Philadelphia in the divisional round.
Yeah. And I think that you're going to get three NFC East teams in the dance here, along with,
you're getting at least three, maybe all four.
Right. I think the Lions probably sneak in because they're just playing really well right now. And I just think they have something, they got some kind of juice going, but it's just crazy, you know, and that's why I think the NFL is loved by so many people. We came into the year being like, you know, the NFC East is just, it is what it is. You know, it's still in the doldrums.
Least.
And now you have three of the four teams, maybe four of them getting in. And at least three of those teams had questions about whether they could be a playoff team this year. So that's just a great part of the NFL. And look, you're right. There is a solace there, but I can understand Dallas's frustration.
You mentioned the Lions. Let's move on. They got to 500. Detroit Lions, 7-7 after a 20-17 win over the New York Jets.
Dan Campbell, his beer. He just wants to drink a beer and put his feet up, RJ.
The Jets are also 7-7. By the way, as it relates to the Jaguars, early reports Monday morning are that Zach Wilson will start for the Jets on Thursday night. So things definitely, if you're
early Christmas present.
If you're a cat related team in the NFL, Jaguar, Lion, Bengal, I guess the Panthers are the only one kind of not mixing it up. But generally speaking, 75% of cat based mascots doing very well for themselves, including the Lions. Pete, big time punt return for a touchdown in this game. Everything is coming up Lions right now.
I love the Lions. They're a scary team because they're playing their best football at the right time. The Lions, of course, get the come up of the week. This was a team that we wrote off and forked, and they are on the brink of getting into the playoffs. And this was a very hot pick to emerge in the offseason. And I think a lot of those same people jumped off the bandwagon when they really thought that they were 1 year away. And say what you want about Dan Campbell.
I never jumped on at that point. I'm here now, but I waited. I wasn't part of that ridiculous.
What I would say is, like, you know, as goofy and as gimmicky as the great Dan Campbell is, he deserves credit for keeping the confidence afloat and just staying the course. And it's been impressive. And for me, I just think if the Lions are able to get in this dance, it's probably going to be as the seventh seed, if we're trying to be honest with each other here, which means they would play.
Yeah, there's no other way. That's the only way forward at this point.
Which means they would play the Minnesota Vikings or the San Francisco 49ers. And especially if it's the Vikings, remember the game where they're favored and everyone's like, why are they favored against
They won that one.
I know
that was 2 weeks ago, but, and they barely lost when they visited Minnesota earlier this season.
And that's a interesting game when you talk about the seven seed being added to the playoffs a few years ago. It didn't really work out the first year of it, but now this 7-2, especially this year when it just feels like the parity is crazier than ever.
Dangerous hand in poker.
The 7-2 game. And especially in the NFC, if it ends up being Lions and Vikings, is just, it's going to be something to watch. And like, you look at the other one, it would be Chiefs and Dolphins. That's really interesting. I just love the 7-2 matchup all of a sudden.
I asked Brandon this a week ago on the mixtape. I'll ask you now. So Vikings, Lions, if that's the wild card matchup right now, you're picking Detroit, right?
I picked the Vikings to make the Super Bowl. I would probably stick.
We both did, right?
I'd probably stick.
Well, allowed to change. Like, allowed to adjust based on
I feel like this is how I feel. I had a preseason pick. If I changed at the beginning of the playoffs, I don't deserve credit for that preseason pick. So I would stay with the Vikes, but I would feel very nervous about that pick.
Okay, so we both acknowledge that it's very possible that the Lions could beat the Vikings in Minnesota in the wildcard round if things shook that way. That would mean that the Lions would be the team visiting the Eagles in the divisional round, as opposed to the, everybody's kind of penciling in the Cowboys as the lone wildcard team to win if you know things go this way. But that would be that's what I asked Brandon is like, I would still pick the Eagles. I imagine they'd be like 4 or 5 point favorites, but like that would be like, that's the team you don't want to see. Like the Lions are the team that could go in and just ruin something that seemed super obvious. You know, I think the Chargers are kind of that way in the AFC. You know what I mean? Like we're all sitting here like, oh yeah, Eagles are going to move on, whatever. You could see the Lions just showing up and like winning, like playing over their heads, winning one game they're not supposed to, and then getting blasted themselves the next week in the NFC Championship game.
Yeah,
because that would be the NFC Championship game, to be fair.
Well, I just think we're entering a playoffs in a couple weeks here where just it I think it's going to be as wild as this weekend was, where you just didn't know how games are going to go. It doesn't matter record wise. It's not going to matter seeding. And for a long time, I felt like confident that the AFC would come down to three teams. But it's just been so crazy that like, would you be stunned if the Chargers or Dolphins were playing in on, you know, in a division round? Would you be stunned if they somehow met in an AFC title game? It would be surprising, but would it be shocking? I mean, I don't know at this point. I think the only shock available in the NFC would be the Eagles losing. And even that, as good as the Eagles are, wouldn't be the craziest thing in the world. And so this is going to be fun. I'm just so excited for the NFL playoffs.
The current NFL playoff picture, the only shocking thing to me would be the Giants beating the 49ers. That would be the only, like, holy crap, that actually happened thing. I do want to say about the Lions, and we can touch on the Jets briefly. So they had their bye in week 6, and then the next week they got destroyed by the Cowboys and Dak Prescott's return, 24-6. The next week they lost by one possession to the Dolphins. I don't know if you remember that. It was a while back, 31-27. Since then, so basically since the day before, since Halloween, they have lost one game and they have won 6. They're 6-1 post Halloween. The lone loss, that very close game at the very end that they dropped to the Buffalo Bills. That's it. Like, I mean, they're a crazy, you know, Josh Allen throw to Stephon Diggs on Thanksgiving away from winning 7 in a row.
And their next 3 games, the Lions are at the Panthers, which they should be favored, right?
Battle of the Cats.
We actually probably have those that. I don't know what the spread is now. Can you look that up quickly? And then the Bears the next week at home, I believe the line should be favored again because they're at home. And then at the Packers,
they're 3-point favorites over the Panthers.
Yeah. And then at the Packers, I would think that would either be a toss up or the Lions might be slight favorites in that. Well, maybe Green Bay would be like 1.5 or 2.5.
I'm sick of like, oh, Aaron Rodgers is going to do this when like all the evidence this season points to the contrary. Right. You know what I mean? Like he has yet to, except for beat the Cowboys, he has yet to do like the Aaron Rodgers thing we expect. But it would be very Aaron Rodgers to like for the Lions to need that game to have won. You know what
let's
I mean?
Be,
won,
let's be liberal there and say that the Packers, the most they would be is like 4.5 point favorites, but still. I don't think it'll be that much. I'm probably in the 2.5 to 3 range, if I'm guessing at this stage. What you have is two games where you're going to be favored, and then 3 very winnable games to get yourself in the postseason. So Lions are spicy, and I think on the NFC side, it's the Lions, and on the AFC side, it's the Jaguars of that 13 seed and March Madness that you're just a little unsure about if you're the 4 seed. You know what I mean? It's that team that has, you know, they're a little quirky, and can stun you if you're not careful.
So I'm looking for this, if you can buy me some time for a moment here. Oh, here we go. Jeremy Reisman, who runs Pride of Detroit around here, tweeted this out early Monday morning. The Lions playoff odds per 538. If they go 3-0, they have a 96% chance of making the playoffs. Yeah. And of those 3 games, what do you think is the most likely loss, if you had to pick one?
Maybe the Bears. Maybe the Bears.
So if they go 2-1 and lose to either the Bears or Panthers, 52% chance.
That's
so still
good.
More likely than not. And even if they go 2-1 and lose to the Packers, 48%. So, you know, just you never
I just
know.
Think that defense. I think that defense has some question marks, and Justin Fields is just ridiculous right now. And I could just see one of those Justin Fields. Right. This is the game you remember. He spoiled the Lions' chances right before he became one of the better quarterbacks in the league type thing at the end of the year. And I don't know. I'm pegging him for that. And
are we ready to
a lot of people hope
we're ready to bury the Jets?
Yeah, let's do it.
I mean,
what do you think?
And it's not really their fault. It's Zach Wilson's fault. You know what I mean? Like Mike White's injured. You know what I mean? Like you just, this isn't going to happen. They're going to drop to 7-8 on Thursday night. And at that point, it's just too difficult.
Yeah. I like the Jags on Thursday night. I don't like the Jags on Thursday night. I should rephrase that. I like any team in the NFL against Zach Wilson at this stage.
The Jets are favored right now.
Yeah, go get your bets in because they're not respecting Trevor Lawrence yet, and they should be.
All right, let's fly through some of these games. Everybody was all in. Oh, the Panthers are coming to the NFC South. Picked the Pittsburgh Steelers to win because I just do not buy these Panthers. Yes, the NFC South is terrible, but still, 24-16, the final score. Mitchell Trubisky gets the win. A quiet 17 of 22 for 179 yards. But Najee Harris kind of had the biggest day, I would say, of any Steelers player. TJ Watt got out of the stat sheet with a sack. Just kind of a dreadful performance for the Panthers. Like, you know, it was cute and fun, but they're not winning the NFC South. I'm not buying that storyline.
It's a shame that they had a dud here because of the Buccaneers losing. They would be right there. You might have a team in that NFC at South that is hosting a playoff game that has an abysmal record. And it might be Tom Brady.
Well, they're one Bucks loss away from being having a below 500 record, the division winner. Because every team has 9 losses except for Tampa. Tampa gets 9.
I don't even think the Panthers are out of it yet, even with this loss. That's how bad the division has been. They're not out of it yet at 5-9.
And they still play the Bucks in week 18. So you're right. I mean, it could swing. That's what we're paying attention to at Blog of the Boys. It's like, because it's Dallas at the NFC South winner, right? Like, that's what this is going to come down to.
Most likely, yes. But, yes.
Most likely Tampa. But Sam Darnold sacked 4 times by the Steelers, as Rachel notes. This was supposed to be quick. Are the Steelers going to win out? Get above 500?
I hope so. That's been something I've been quietly rooting for. I want to mention this to you, RJ. The Buccaneers are under some pressure now. As I'm looking at the standings, what I'm realizing is every other team in the division is 5-9. So if one team puts it together, the Bucs are going to be under steam to finish out strong here.
Amazingly, the Bucks. You're right. So the Bucks 5-6-8. Excuse me. This was supposed to be about the Panthers.
I apologize. But yeah.
Every other team 5-9. So the Bucks lead the division. Not only with a 6-8 record, they have the worst point differential of all 4 teams. They are negative 41.
Is this Tom Brady's last year? You think after this disaster?
So Tom Brady is 6-0 against the Cowboys, right? Sure. And so the Bucks have the Cardinals on Sunday Night Football because that's what we really need. But so, like, we think we'll get to the Cardinals momentarily. So once they get to 7 wins, again, it could go any way, but like it's difficult to see it not being the Bucks. It would be sweet retribution if the Cowboys did end Tom Brady's career, right? Like if the Cowboys go to Tampa in the wild card round, win, and Tom Brady retires and never plays again, that would be a point of satisfaction for me after going 0-6 against him. But I mean, you can't put anything past him. Like, and again, this is supposed to be about the Panthers, but like, let's just go ahead and transition as we're talking. The Bucks lost to the Bengals. And so we'll get to Cincinnati soon, but like that will live in my mind forever. Like, I do not want to go to Tampa. Like, I don't care how bad they look. I don't care about any of it all. I do not want to play Tom Brady in the playoffs, no matter what.
I could see why you wouldn't. And I'm surprised that did they have to keep Tampa Bay in Arizona as the Sunday night game because of Christmas? Like you couldn't switch the times there.
So there are only, just so everybody's aware, there's only 3 games on Christmas. It's going to be, so Christmas is Sunday. It's going to be like Saturday this past week where there's a noon game, a 3 o'clock game, and a night game. So the true sort of like NFL day this week is Saturday. The majority of games taking place on Christmas Eve. So yeah, they can't move it because it's there's only 3 games.
Tom, I mean, the Buccaneers are going to, they should win out, you would think, with the Cardinals, Panthers.
I don't know, but look. We don't need to spend time on the bad teams. Cincinnati got this win. They are super impressive. Mm-hmm. I mean, they find a way, dude. Like, I mean, I really, really, really like this Bengals team. I more so than I thought. BTP, I was like, oh man, now we're really looking at Tampa winning this thing. And they came back and outscored them from that point on 34-6.
I'm not sure if everyone got that robotic RJ mode, but I think you froze up for a second. But you're just saying you were impressed by the fact that they were able to stay with it and come back being down 17.
Yeah, they were down 17-0 and outscored them 34-6. And those 6 points were in the final minute of the game, kind of garbage time. Like the Bengals dug in and changed everything.
I think most impressive too is the 4 touchdowns from Joe Burrow, but it wasn't this Burrow Chase thing. They went to 4 different receivers. Right. It was Chase, Boyd, Wilcox, and Higgins. And you're seeing that trust from Burrow where we know about the top 3 receivers, but even adding a 4th to the mix and just finding a way, I think was impressive. Like you talk about that Chiefs game and how the stats were so impressive. but they, you know, were flirting with a loss to the Texans. These stats weren't all that impressive, but it was grinding and finding a way. And it was the defense. The defense gave them additional opportunities. And I think that's a very underrated part about the Cincinnati Bengals, is just how strong this defense is, and in providing Joe Burrow short field and opportunities and timely, and just an ability to beat the elite quarterbacks of the NFL. And that's what makes Cincinnati a scary proposition. And they're right there. I mean, everyone's talking about the Chiefs and Bills in the AFC. It could play out in a way in which the Bengals sneak into that position too, which no one is really considering at this stage. And I think that's a mistake.
I agree. I think Joe Burrow is the most hiding in plain sight elite quarterback. I think everybody acknowledges that he's really good, but he's more than that. You know what I mean? He is elite.
Let's just be clear here about the Bengals and their situation. I covered the Chiefs. I'll tell you, I believe that they'll win their final three games against the Seahawks and then the Broncos and then the Raiders. But
if they don't, the Bengals, one Chiefs loss gives the Bengals control over their
destiny. They play the Bills and they have the tiebreaker against the Chiefs. And
they play the Ravens and have an opportunity now to win the AFC North. They needed that.
Yeah. Let's just even take away the Kansas City part out of it. I think they'll beat the Seahawks. That's two division games. Like, you really never know what can happen in a division game, especially when the division just seems to play the Chiefs tough. And the Raiders are a team that still kind of has a little something to play for. And they got the Raiders on the schedule. They're very much in it for the bye, is what I should say, especially with the Chiefs sort of playing down to their competition at the moment.
That's the way Joe Burrow wins MVP. That's what I've talked about before. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And so I don't know if you saw this. The NFL teams this season are 3-10 the week after playing the Texans. And that obviously includes a Cowboys loss yesterday. Yeah. But you're right. So the Bengals need to win out, and one Chiefs loss, and they're the one seed in the AFC.
Correct.
That would also presumably knock the Ravens down from the 5 seed to the 6 seed, which we talked about with Mike a little while ago. So congratulations to the Bengals. Let's get through these two very quickly. The Saints beat the Falcons 21-18, which leveled them in the NFC South. You could argue the Saints should be 6-8, as opposed to the Bucks based on last week. But 21-18, the final score, both New Orleans and Atlanta 5-9. It was Desmond Ridder's first start, 13 of 26 for 97 yards.
Yeah, not much to say about this one. It's two division teams playing each other, and they're both bad. I think Atlanta's seeing what they have in Ridder. I don't know if we've seen nearly enough. It's good that we're going to get to see him the rest of the season so they can see it.
That's why, like, they're out. Right. Like, you know what I'm saying? The Falcons are out of the NFC South race, at least.
And good on them for realizing that and at least seeing what they have with Ridder. I mean, the passing game wasn't great, quite obviously. But, this is a guy that's starting to get his feet wet in the NFL. The Saints, I guess you could say that they're still breathing just because that division is so poor, but this feels like a throwaway game that's not going to matter in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, I mean, the Saints, I don't know. The Broncos messed up the most of all teams that traded away their future, top draft picks last offseason, but the Saints are right there, man. Like at least the Broncos, you could argue, like, they believed in Russell. Like, that idea had flaws, but it made sense, right? Like, why were the Saints... What were they thinking giving up their first round pick? Like, it just, it's tough scene in Nolens. But last one before the last one, actually, we have two more to fly through. Speaking of, the Denver Broncos, led by Brett Rypien, beat the Arizona Cardinals in a game that Colt McCoy was knocked out of. So Trace McSorley, who has a very popular TikTok following, had to come in. The Cardinals stink. They're 4-10. The Broncos are 4-10. The only thing this did was upset Mookie because all the fans of field goals now saw their first round draft pick of Denver worsen a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know about Arizona. I think it's a team that's ripe for a regime change at this stage of the game. And you got Kyler coming back, and they've got one of the worst situations in the league, at this stage of the game with that situation. And then on the Denver side, you still, with the backup beginning the game, were down 9-3 in the third quarter and really needed to have a strong ending to your day to win. Just two bad teams in bad situations. And I think the one thing that these two teams have in common is that they're going to be looking for a head coach this offseason.
The Las Vegas Raiders. There are so few things it seems like could happen to where we could say, I've never seen that before in the NFL, right? Like, but somehow, some way, like every season kind of tends to give us
one. You're a well-known proponent of the scorigami, as they say. You love this type of thing.
Well, this isn't a scorigami. 30 to 24 has happened many times, but the way that the Raiders play-a-gami, won this
a playagami, if you will.
Yeah, I have never seen this before.
Never?
Ever in my life. So like people freaked out about the Titans interception that happened. Did you see this? The tip back in?
Yeah.
I've seen that before. It's like in 2007, Oklahoma State did it.
NBA Jam.
But I have never, ever seen this before. The game is tied at 24. The Patriots are, for whatever reason, throwing laterals. I mean, Jacoby Myers gets involved. And Chandler Jones, former Patriot, I can't even call it picks it off because it's technically a fumble. You know what I mean?
Like I
throwing it backwards.
I have some analysis of this. I think that this is what I think happened. I think that they were in the middle of a play. And in the NFL, these players are always like, you got to get to a place of muscle memory, right? So muscle memory means that, you know, you play best when you're not thinking about anything. To me, this actually, in a way, hear me out, is on Ramondre. Ramondre should go down. He should not lateral it because I think once he lateraled it.
So you're saying before it ends up in Jacoby's hands?
Yes, because once he laterals it to Jacoby.
Jacoby goes into like, he's like lateral
mode. We're down. Because why would you ever in a freaking a million years lateral it? And because he's only playing off of like his muscle memory. The muscle memory.
Such a great point.
The muscle memory of a lateral is
right.
We need to score or we're done. And so in his head, he's just like, wait a minute. We're in, because it's a 3 second thought. It's a 1 second thought. We're in score mode. And I think completely. And I don't even like, this is I know everyone's making fun of him. I don't blame him because someone just lateraled him the ball in these situations. You have to score or the game's over. And so I just think he was going off of muscle memory, throws it back. And then all of a sudden it hit him. It's like, why was it even lateral in the first place? Go down, Ramondre. Like, what are you doing?
I agree. Ramondre is skating by as far as Blaine is concerned here. But to me, that goes back to like the Trevor Lawrence thing. Like I told you about, like in the break, Doug Peterson has to be telling Trevor Lawrence, dude, the moment the officials get set, like the clock's going to run, right? So somebody, like whether it's Belichick or somebody has to tell everybody before that play, no matter what, do not lateral. You know, like I'm sure now people will say like, don't lateral it, but like, no matter what, the game is tied. Do not turn the ball. We're going to try this crazy thing. Do not turn the ball over. And to your point, Ramondre pulls at that thread first. Ramondre is the first person who literally turns the ball over, but we haven't even talked about Chandler Jones. What a stiff arm. Poor Mac Jones, dude. Mac had no
Jones
chance.
On Jones like, crime there for sure.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
But like, I have you ever seen that before? Ever in your life? That kind of walk-off touchdown?
No, and what makes it even funnier is it's against the team, the guy that's supposed to have
the
team
guy,
so
the coach
well
who, like,
coached,
who's so fundamental.
Run it
yeah,
like a machine. No mistakes. Do your job. I thought it was telling that Belichick went into the locker room and he essentially told the guys to stay together. I mean, this is a loss that could ruin your season, especially the way that it ended. And you know, I think he'll have the guys ready next week. But unbelievable, and it keeps the Raiders alive, and very barely, right? But it does keep them at least in the mix. If they lost this game, they were done. And if they somehow miraculously pull this off, we'll be remembering, you know, that play. But unbelievable, and as predicted or as predictable, Twitter erupted. And as I said, I feel bad for Jacoby because I just think he got put in a very bad spot. And you know, try to think about when you played like youth sports or high school sports or whatever, it could have happened where you're just, you know, thinking about what that it's means instinct. When someone laterals you. So
okay, last one. We have to do it, Pete.
Oh,
start spreading the news. The Giants are not leaving today.
Oh yeah.
The playoffs are coming for the New York Giants.
Yeah.
What a huge win for the New York, once again, good at football Giants.
Man, get these referees some blue unis, am I right? At the end of the game there.
I've been watching football for 37 years, and I ain't never seen a ref make a call as egregious as this, but I'll take it.
What
it
are you talking about? Of course he had money on the game. I don't care. Look at our Giants, 8-5 now. We needed that win. I'm glad that they paid him off.
All we got to do is sneak in. Remember Eli against the Patriots. If it can happen then, it happened twice. Not once, but twice. It could happen again.
You think the birds?
Those dirty birds, you can't fly in the winter. They gotta fly south.
Washington Commanders fans and their big hats have something to be upset about. This morning, the refereeing at the end of the game was tough. I know that everyone's looking to have a big conspiracy about McLaren lining up at the end of the game. But if you really watch the clip, I think the referee is trying to point at that he is not on it. And he's trying to point it like, no, you got to step up. We don't know what was said. And so this conspiracy.
This exact same thing happened to Jalen Tolbert, the Cowboys rookie receiver against the Packers in overtime. And we killed him for it. We were like, you can't make that mistake. And so like, I hear Terry McLaurin, but Terry McLaurin has to absorb some blame.
I wish we knew what was said, because I just can't imagine the referee would have said you're good and then thrown a flag. I know that like this is a thing that happens all the time. The receivers on the line check with the ref to make sure. So I think there just was a miscommunication. I think McLaurin maybe thought that he said you're good and was trying to point at the line of like where he wasn't. That's what it looks like to me. I know that this is Twitter. This is Reddit. This is let's stock up videos and shine light onto the ref and blow it up and whatever. And like people just assume that something was happening when it wasn't. Whatever, it was called, it took the touchdown away. It can't take it back now. It was an egregious pass interference in the end zone. There's no doubt about it, but I'd rather the referees eat the flag there than sometimes what we see is games decided on the wrong call. Call me crazy for that. I'm not trying to like have Giants bias here. I love the WFT. People who have listened to this podcast know that I have a soft spot in my heart for the WFT. But it's a 60-minute game, right? And this was almost on its way to a tie again. Which would
the Giants deserved it?
I'll tell you what the key part of the game was. This is before all the referee stuff, even took place. Was Saquon Barkley? They're just you knew that they were running it, and he was getting 12 yards carry.
That fourth quarter, like the icing of it, that was the most electric I've seen a running back look all season.
Yeah.
Just like that moment. You know what I'm saying? Like he was unstoppable in the fourth quarter.
Barkley is a fascinating case. You know, to talk about this podcast covering the whole league. Barkley is a fascinating case when it comes to what does the league do with the star running back at this stage? Because I think it's a worthy question. What is he going to get on the open market? Are the Giants going to retain him? I don't think they're going to want to pay him what he probably would get on an open market situation, but then where does he go? Does he want to stay in New York? Does he take a little bit of that Broadway blues discount? I don't know, but
there ain't no place like New York.
But you're right. There are times when he looks like the best running back in the league. You know, I think a couple other backs can say that. Chubb and Henry are among them. And yeah.
Isaac Pacheco, right?
Christian McCaffrey of the lovely San Francisco 49ers. But yeah, I'm fascinated to see what happens with Barkley. And, you know, for Washington, it's still a team with something to play for. You woke up after losing a division game and you're in the seventh seed. So just take care of business the rest of the way.
Agreed. I mean, it's all good if you're Washington. There's no need to freak out. Although, man alive, you got to visit the 49ers this coming week, and they're playing for the two seed. And that could, shake very differently. This week, the Giants are visiting the Vikings. And so if the Giants wind up winning that game, then the Niners obviously can take over the two seed, which is what they're rooting for, obviously. The Giants, though, Pete, could benefit. The Giants are big Eagles fans right now, even though they lost to them recently. Because if the Giants lose in Minnesota, they're probably going to beat the Indianapolis Colts. Right? I think we feel that way. Okay. Week 18, the Giants are in Philadelphia. Very, very, very possible that Philadelphia has clinched the one seed and the division, obviously, by that point in time. And any win, if you're the Giants, certainly helps keep you alive in the wild card.
When you're Philadelphia, the way that Jalen Hurts plays, if you have nothing to play for, he sits, in my opinion. We'll see what Sirianni does. Sometimes they'll play a series just to keep their feet wet, but you're right. That would be such a huge break for them, is being able to play the backup in a game they need to win. And let's be honest, the Giants have become a team this year that can beat a backup. I think that's a safe thing to say. And so, we'll see what happens. But they're in good position. They had a little bit of a slip up here, but this was a big win for them last night of getting into the playoffs, which would be a huge success for New York and for Washington as well.
Mm. It is time to welcome in Rachelle, who is perfect in every conceivable way. Rachelle, first of all, are you somebody who opens presents on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day? Second of all, your big NFL takeaways, and third of all, of course, MF MVP.
Yes, we open up our gifts on Christmas morning, not Christmas Eve.
No.
So I'm not a fan of that. Like, you have to be patient.
You know what
so
you need.
It's like when your friends text and they're like, I got this, and it's Christmas Eve, you're like, what's wrong with you? Like,
yes.
Today's Christmas.
Like, what are you doing?
Nothing like a hot cup of coffee. right, in your Santa mug, and you say, Merry Christmas, everyone, and you're unwrapping a little gift. You got the caffeine flowing a little bit. Yeah, it's the best. Yeah.
Yeah, no. My takeaways, I have a couple rookie spotlights I wanted to touch on. One, got to give it from the Giants Commanders game, Kayvon Thibodeau. Huge game, monster performance. He had 12 total tackles, a sack, 3 tackles for loss, a forced fumble, and the touchdown. So big play, big game for him. And also, even though the Falcons rookie wide receiver Drake London did have that fumble, I still think that him and Desmond Ridder are someone to just like keep an eye out on. I think that they have some really good chemistry. It's still early, they're young, but I'm going to be watching them. So they were pretty interesting to watch. And then I got to give it to the Eagles pass rush, who were definitely going down in history, like continue to dominate. My points for today, I have to say RJ was doing a phenomenal. He had it. I loved your point about like the Bears and, you know, the darkest part of the night being behind them. I really like that point that you made. Also about the Lions, you know, being the team that you don't want to see. You had talked about the referees early, and I feel like you can't talk about the week 15 performances from all the teams without mentioning the referees because they were pretty awful.
Agreed.
But then
here we go.
It came down to Pete. I really like your point on Justin Fields being the guy and how they need to build the system around him.
Maybe. Although the darkest thing was my line. Whatever.
Those are both on the Bears.
Always got to bring it back to the Ravens, baby. That's the key.
I love it. And what won it for me was your take on the Patriots wild play. Your analysis on that to me.
It was a great point.
It was a really, really good point. So RJ was winning. I'm not going to hold you.
Don't call it a comeback.
You Jacksonville Jaguared me, Pete.
I did.
I blew a 17-point lead.
We didn't even talk about that. RJ, 4 days ago, went on a Twitter, wanted everybody to know there was one SB Nation expert who picked the Jaguars.
I did mention that. I mentioned that when we talked about this.
Not in detail though. Like you, I wanted to make sure that everyone knew that you spotlighted this bad boy.
I also want to clarify, because I have to everywhere that I have a microphone, for a little while, that my Nick Bosa, Micah Parsons tweet last week was a result of a lost bet. That dominated my social media sphere for a very long time. It was very frustrating.
When I lost, I bought out of it. I sent the winner a $50 Chipotle card, and I said, I'm not doing this. So then keep that in mind for the future.
That's not fair. You're not supposed to buy out of it.
Rachel, revoke his MFW.
No, he's
not lying. He really did that, by the way.
I believe it.
No, we're not.
It was a Chipotle gift card. So he didn't even
burritos.
I endured 3 days of misery on
that.
Yeah, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing that. I've been picking better ever since. So I haven't had to worry.
Rachel, I would like you to pick a Christmas song, a very popular one that Pete has to sing a little bit of. Be careful. We don't want to get caught with rights things.
Right.
But just a little bit, you know, as we head on out. So what Christmas song do you want today's MF double MVP to sing as we tie a bow? Oh, by the way, I'm taking the Packers tonight. So, Rachel, go for it. Pick the song, please.
I like Destiny's Child. Oh, 8 days of Christmas. That's a good one.
8 days. I don't know if I even know how that goes.
Oh, okay. Just do Mariah Carey. What's
All I want for Christmas
All
is
I
you.
All I want for Christmas All is I you. That's Christmas. The one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Here we go. Let me warm up here. I don't want a lot for Christmas. There is just one thing I need. I don't care about presents underneath the Christmas tree. I just want you for my own, more than you would ever know. Make my wish come true, all I want for Christmas is you.